ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Canto 6, Chapter 23, entitled The Transcendental Qualities of Ritrasura, Text 23. Traivargikasaya vigatam asmat patir vidate purushasya sakra tato anumayo bhagavat prasado वर्गिकासया विगताम अस्मात् पतिर विदते पुरुषास्य साक्रा ततो अन्मयो भगवत् प्रसादो यो दुर्लभो किंचना गोचरा न्याये त्रैवर्गिकायासा विगताम अस्मात् पतिर विधते पुरुषास्य साक्रा ततो अनुमयो भगवत् प्रसादो यो दुर्लभा अकिंचना गोचरान्याये। Traivargika, for the three objectives, namely religiosity, economic development, and satisfaction of the senses, ayasa of endeavor, vighatam, the ruin, asmat, our, pati, lord, vidhate, performs, purushasya, of a devotee, shakra, O Indra, tataha, whereby, anumeyaha, to be inferred, bhagavat prasada, the special mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you, which durlabha, very difficult to obtain, akinchana gochara, within the reach of the unalloyed devotees, anye, by others who aspire for material happiness. Translation on Prabhupada by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation. Our Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, forbids His devotees to endeavor uselessly for religion, economic development and sense gratification. O Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. Such mercy is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees, not by persons who aspire for material gains. Purport. There are four objectives in human life, namely religiosity, that is dharma, economic development, that is artha, sense gratification, that is kama, and liberation, that is moksha, from the bondage of material existence. People generally aspire for religiosity, economic development and sense gratification. But a devotee has no other desire than to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead both in this life and in the next. The special mercy for the unalloyed devotee is that the Lord saves him from hard labor to achieve the results of religion, economic development and sense gratification. Of course, if one wants such benefits, the Lord certainly awards them. Indra, for example, although a devotee, was not much interested in release from material bondage. Instead, he desired sense gratification and a high standard of material happiness in the heavenly planets. Vritrasura, however, being an unalloyed devotee, aspired only to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Lord arranged for him to go back to Godhead after his bodily bondage was destroyed by Indra. Vritrasura requested Indra to release his thunderbolt against him as soon as possible so that both he and Indra would benefit according to their proportionate advancement in devotional service. The translation given by Srila Prabhupada is so beautiful that each sentence here conveys a special meaning, especially for us practicing sadhakas. And with that in mind, I request all of you to please repeat after me. Our Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, forbids His devotees to endeavor uselessly for religion, economic development and sense gratification. O Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. Such mercy is obtainable only by the unalloyed devotees, not by persons who aspire for material gains. So here each sentence in this translation is worthy of meditation. And we will try to see how best we can use this guidance given to us as practicing sadhakas. Now, in the shastras, there are four purusharths which are mentioned. That is, four things which we have to endeavor for in our day-to-day life. What are they? They are dharma, artha, kama and moksha. One follows the other, and actually if we are not very careful, this could turn out to be a loop or a cycle, and we could be caught in this loop for lifetimes together. our endeavor should be to get out of this loop. And that is why Vritrasura is mentioning that the Lord is so kind that he advises us not to get entangled in this loop. Now we will see or examine this loop a little more in detail and try and understand why is it that we should not be caught up in this loop, and why is it that we should endeavor at a certain point in time to get away from the loop, and how we can achieve that. Firstly, dharma. Dharma is something which comes out of right conduct, religious behavior. We perform our duties. Artha comes from accumulating wealth. Kama is enjoying through the senses. And moksha is liberation from the cycle of birth and death. Now, we'll look into these four aspects a little more in detail to try and understand what Srila Prabhupada is trying to convey to us. Is that when we take dharma, right from our childhood, each one of us, I've been saying that, yes, okay, I want to be a doctor, I want to be an engineer, I want to do this, I want to be a businessman, and this is how I will lead my life. So that is the intrinsic nature which one is manifesting. So, and by performance of these religious duties and by right conduct in the execution of his duties, he will be executing dharma. So that is about dharma in brief. Now, as a result of the right conduct of executing dharma, the natural consequence or a fallout of that is we get wealth. Now, as you do your job in the right mode, you do your job or your profession or you conduct your business, you start to think how I can get more money. So the first one is dharma, where we meditate as to what we want to do and we do that in a proper fashion. And then as a result of that, we get money. Now we get so engrossed in this process of making money that we do not see a limit, and we want to endeavor more and more and more and more, so that we want to get more and more and more money. So that's where it leads you, that yes, you are caught up in this vicious cycle that you want to earn money and build a sufficient bank balance for leading a good life. Now, there will come a certain point in time after we've accumulated money that we'll think that as to why are we accumulating this money? That money is sitting there in the bank. Yes, we can draw comfort from that. But then, what are we using it for? Are we using it for anything? No, it's sitting in the bank. Then we scratch our heads and say that, yes, now I should start using the money. And what do I use it for? For sense gratification. So firstly, I do my job, which is execute my dharma. Then I start earning money. And then I come to the state that, yes, I have got a lot of money, I have got a pot of money. Now I need to enjoy. Because if I do not enjoy it this life, I know, I am pretty intelligent. On the day of reckoning, this money is now going to come with me in my next life, wherever I go. So I want to enjoy this money. So I enjoy the money and use it for sense gratification. And I go to the fullest extent. And the more I enjoy, I come to a certain stage that, yes, I am enjoying. But am I getting fulfillment from that enjoyment? Is that enjoyment perpetual? Is it forever? No. As long as the bank balance is intact, it has some money, I can continue to enjoy. The day the bank balance runs dry, this enjoyment music is going to stop. So, and on the other side, it does not give me fulfillment. Why does it not give me fulfillment? Because at the end of the day, we are all spiritual entities. And where are we? We are in this Dukhalayam Asaswatam. Krishna has said that this place is a place of misery and this is temporary. So, it's just like going to a medical shop. In a medical shop, obviously the chemist will stock drugs, medicines, tablets. Now, if we go and ask him for a 50 gram gold chain, obviously we are knocking at the wrong door. Similarly, here we are trying to enjoy through our senses in the wrong place. We are not going to be satisfied. We are not going to achieve that satisfaction. So, we are like a fish out of the water. A fish out of the water cannot survive. So, we have got fed up of this enjoyment and we have come to the stage that yes, let us chuck it. Enough is enough. I have had enough. I have enjoyed but I am not getting fulfillment. Now I need fulfillment. How do I go about achieving that? That is, I want to aim for moksha. That is liberation altogether. I want to annihilate myself from all these material entanglements and see that these material propensities do not disturb me any further and that I will take up spiritual pursuits. And if we go down the road, if anybody who is steeped in Hinduism, we ask him, what is the goal of life? What do you see? The ordinary common man, he will say, in Hindi, hame moksh milna hai. Meaning, I want to achieve moksha. That's what he can think up to. Now, is moksha the ultimate goal of life? We as practicing sadhakas know that it is only a springboard. It is only a place that from attaining moksha, we have to go forward to be able to seek that fulfillment which has been denied to us this far. So, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma na sochati na kangshati sama sarvesu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labate param. That is, when you achieve moksha, you are on the Brahma Bhuta platform. You are not wanting to go after material pursuits. You think you are satisfied. You have come to such a stage that there is no hankering. I want, I want, I want. There is no lamentation. Oh, why did I get this? Why did I get this? Why did this happen to me? No. You are sort of self-satisfied and you do not repent. Oh, why did this happen to me? Why did this misfortune befell me? At that point in time, we see all living entities as equal. Mad bhaktim labate param. That is, we achieve the qualification for getting bhakti, which will actually provide us the springboard for fulfillment. This latter part, that the recognition that this platform of moksha is not the be end and end all, is not known to quite a lot of people. They think that attaining moksha, we are done for this life. They have very little knowledge about the next life because of a poor fund of knowledge. But we as practicing sadhakas, thanks to Srila Prabhupada and the acharyas in our parampara, have been taught that yes, this platform of moksha which we have achieved is an intermediate platform. It is not the end of the everything. Now, at the beginning I mentioned that these four purushas, they are in the form of a loop. Now, how does it become a loop is what we will try to understand. That is where the common man and we in our parampara distinguish this feature. And that is, if we think that yes, we have attained moksha, we would be, in fact, that moksha would have come about after practicing quite a lot of severe austerities. And there are quite a lot of Babajis in India who think that yes, they have practiced enough austerities to have attained that moksha level, and that they themselves qualify as Bhagavan. And what do they do at that stage? They say, you please worship me, I am Bhagavan. They forget about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and whatever. They say, I am Bhagavan, I am deserving of the worship. Some even go to the extent of saying that you are also Bhagavan. You can also participate in this. So when one comes to this kind of an understanding, one falls into the loop. That is, as long as your pious credits are in existence, you enjoy and then you go back to square one. Brahma tells in the Bhagavatam to the Lord, ye anye arvindaksha vimukta maninas tvayayasta bhavat avisuddha buddhayo aryugya prachrena parampada tatau patanti adho anadritam yusmat angrayaha. That is, one who has reached that platform, if he thinks he has achieved everything, that is the beginning of his fall down. So what he advises is that yes, you may achieve that level, Brahma Bhuta platform, but then we have to endeavor forward. We have to go forward. We have to surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord and not get into conception that yes, I am God, and the question of bhakti is sidelined. So that is a trap which we should not be falling into. So people who are falsely under the impression of being liberated without devotion service to the Lord may reach the goal of Brahmajyoti, but they're, because of their impure consciousness and for want of shelter in the Vaikuntha Lokas, such so-called liberated persons again fall down into material existence. So that is why that loop has to be avoided at any cost. So we need to understand that moksha is only an incidental passing event. It is not the end of the journey. The end of the journey is to strive for bhakti and to serve the Lord. Now, that is why here Vritrasura says that, O Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead forbids his devotees to endeavor uselessly for religion, economic development and sense gratification. So he says, O Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. So this is where we have to appreciate the fact that yes, that the Lord as well as the parampara, they give us this knowledge that moksha is not the end of journey, but then it is a phase of our lifelong journey to attain bhakti. Now, how do we see God? That is, how do we serve God? How do we come and attain the level of pure bhakti? Before we come to that level, the Lord gives us certain indications how we should not see Him. Naham Vedir. That is, we need not study the scriptures. We can study the scriptures endlessly. But Naham Vedir, Na Tapasha. We can do whatever austerities we want. We can lie on a bed of nails. We can immerse ourselves in icy cold water or sit under the midday sun surrounded by a blazing fire. That is not going to help us to understand Lord. Na Danena. I mean, whatever amount of charity we may give, that is not going to help us to attain or understand the Lord. Na cha ijjaya, nor can he be understood by rituals. Furthermore, it is mentioned in Bhagavatam, na sadati mam yogo, that is, you may perform all types of yoga, especially ashtanga yoga. Na sankhyam dharma, he is speaking to Uddhava, that is, understanding material creation through analysis. Na swadhyaya tapastyago, that is, reading scriptures, pious work, renunciation, all this will not help us. Yata bhaktir mamorjita, that is, only through bhakti can be achieved. So this is what has been stressed by Krishna time and again in Bhagavad Gita, that it is only through bhakti that we can understand Krishna and serve him. Furthermore, he mentions in Bhagavad Gita, bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan chasmitah yavan chasmitatvatau tato ma tatvato jignyata vichate tad anantaram. That is, you can understand me only through bhakti, and you can enter my kingdom, and as a result of entering my kingdom, you have reached a point of no return. That is what we should be looking for. And that is the reason why Vritrasura says here clearly that he, Indra, you can thus infer how kind the Lord is. This is the message which we have to absorb. So we can understand that moksha is not the ultimate goal of life, but it is bhakti. Now, here Vritrasura mentioned that we can infer how kind the Lord is. We would like to examine this aspect a little more in depth and understand the Lord's kindness. He literally sells himself to please the devotees. I mean, he cannot see his devotee being tormented at any stage. For instance, Prahlad Maharaj, he was tormented by his father, Hiranyakashipu, who was the demon of the highest order. But then, he came down to rescue Prahlad. And not only that, the Lord upholds whatever the devotee says, right or wrong. Like Brahma gave all kinds of boons to Hiranyakashipu that I will not be killed in the air, I will not be killed in the land, I will not be killed during daylight, and I will not be killed during night time, this, that, etc. He upheld all whatever Brahma had granted as boon to Hiranyakashipu, but then took care of Hiranyakashipu. So this is how the Lord exhibits his kindness, that yes, whatever the devotee promises, he ensures that that is upheld. And dharma is upheld at any cost. That is the mystical power endowed by Krishna. Similarly, Nalakubera and Manigriva, they were cursed by Narad Muni, and when they realized, both of them, the kind of a mistake which they have done, Narad Muni, out of sheer compassion, said, yes, you will. I cannot retract my curse, but you will have to go down and bide your time, and I will ensure that the Lord comes and personally delivers. And although quite a lot of time elapsed between the time when they came down as trees, the Arjuna tree, and the time the Lord delivered them, but the Lord ensured that Narada's words were upheld, and both of them went back home, back to Godhead. Similarly, when he was playing around pranks in the house of Yashoda Mai, he could see the concern which Yashoda Mai had for him, and as a result of which he said, okay, if this devotee is reciprocating towards me to this extent, I will allow myself to be bound, whereas we know that in all the three worlds there is nobody who can bind the Supreme Lord.
Similarly, we can understand his kindness by noticing or taking note of the various hints he drops at various places in the scriptures, how we can come back to him. Because the Lord is very eager that each and every one of us, he wants us back there. But unfortunately, starting from me, I mean, that eagerness is not displayed. So we bide our time here in this material world. For instance, he says that whosoever remembers me at the time of death, he will come back to me. He drops to scent. Or who meditates on my transcendental appearance and disappearance, there will be no more births. So these are hints which he is dropping in the places, in the appropriate places. So we've got to grab these hints and understand and pursue those paths, and also understand that in this material world, we are at a wrong address. We are like a fish out of the water, and endeavor to go back home, back to Godhead, so that we can serve him eternally. So the devotees, the unalloyed devotees who have got the mercy of the Lord, for instance, Prahlad Maharaj, Gajendra, etc., plenty more. So this is how, I mean, this each and every sentence in this translation, I mean, is rich in nectar, whereby we can understand which direction are we heading and which direction should we head. Srimad Bhagavatam gives the conclusion in 3.7.14, simply by chanting and hearing the transcendental name, form, etc. of the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one can achieve the cessation of unlimited miserable conditions. Now what more can we want? I mean, it's such a easy process which the Lord has given us, that especially in this age of Kali, he knows that yes, we can't even sit for 5 minutes in one place without moving ourselves. So forget about meditation and giving in charity, etc. Just by taking the name, we go back home, back to Godhead. So let us all loudly chant, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Before I end, I would like to meditate on the last sentence here, that such mercy is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees and not by persons who aspire for material gains. I would like to share a personal experience. Although I am not definitely in this category of unalloyed devotee, I am far removed from that, but yet in spite of that, I would like to share with you a personal difficulty where I was placed, or a personal risk to myself as well as to a few other things which I will relate now. And you can understand how kind the Lord is. I was brought up in Krishna consciousness in a Middle East country. I would not like to name that country here for obvious reasons. And in the Middle East country is not so free as to practice Krishna consciousness as we can do it in India. For instance, whenever sannyasis come down to our place, the first instruction which we get on email is, please do not come with dhoti kurta. Please do not wear your tilak. Please do not exhibit your chanting bag. Please do not show your kanti mala. Please do not is the instructions which we get. So much so that we are not allowed to leave our chapels outside, but to bring it inside the house. These are the kind of instructions which we get in that country. And we practice, try to practice bhakti. In this kind of an environment, it's but natural that these kind of scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Back to Godhead magazine, and all the other books of Prabhupada and Acharyas, they are not readily available. You try to send them by post, they will be scanned at the customs and they will be confiscated. They will not allow these sort of books to reach the ultimate destination. So this is the kind of scenario in which we practice. And of course, we do maintain book tables. It's not that we do not have book tables, but then the way we get the books is, whosoever is working there in that country, whenever he comes to India, devotees request, if you can bring a Bhagavad Gita or two or a first canto of Bhagavatam in your luggage, personal luggages are not to that extent checked, they bring that. That trip of mine, I was coming here for Navadvip Mandal Parikrama, and I was to go back for Gaur Purnima. I came here just on a short visit, just those 8 or 9 days. And the devotees, as usual, made the request, Prabhuji, if you can bring books for us, because book table we are running dry. We don't have books. I said, okay. So I didn't have much of a thing, and I had a luggage allowance. I picked up quite a lot of books from Mayapur, and I went back. I landed in the airport, first class swanky airport, fully air conditioned. And normally I've never been checked there. I've gone through that airport number of times. But then, and to avoid, to take further precaution, which appeared in my tiny brain, these books were in a cardboard box. I kept the cardboard box on the trolley. I kept my suitcase on top of that cardboard box. And I took out my jacket and I casually put it on top of that so that it will get camouflaged. I thought I'll walk across. But there were three plain clothes people standing there in that usual robes, Middle Eastern robes. And I could recognize that, yes, they were plain clothes people, and they flicked at me. And they look out for people traveling alone. Men traveling alone. I was alone. So when I was passing by them, they said like this. And that means that I have to get all my luggage x-rayed. Otherwise, I don't have to get x-rayed. It's a green channel. Just walk through. I knew I had it. And in that air-conditioned environment, I started perspiring. But I can't help it. That led to a cubicle. There were two x-ray machines. I put my luggage on one of them. And the luggage came out at the other end. I was just about to lift the luggage. Those two x-ray machines were manned by one police woman. She was in full uniform. And just as I was about to lift the luggage, her mobile phone rang. But she asked me, what books are you carrying? She did not ask me, what are you carrying? She could see from the x-ray, the thing, that these were books. And I knew that the moment I give that answer, I am going to be caught. Anyway, the mobile phone rang and I shouted from there at the end of the thing that these are children's books, Indian culture. I didn't say anything much. She kept on talking on the phone. I was perspiring, and I was in that environment. I was taking out my handkerchief and wiping my face. And these sort of indications, anybody could understand that there's something wrong with this fellow. And she was also watching me. I was praying to Narasimhadev that if there is anybody who can take this out, it is only you. I am absolutely powerless. And by that time, more people started coming onto that x-ray machine. And there was a queue formed and people were murmuring in Arabic, why is it getting delayed? Why can't we go? At the other end, I was praying. Suddenly she said, go. I took the box and ran from there. So this is how kind the Lord is. Even for a fallen soul like me, He protected me. Had I got caught that day, yes, the books would definitely have been confiscated. I would also have run a personal risk of having my visa cancelled and maybe jailed and deported. So it's only Narasimhadev who saved me. So this is how kind the Lord is. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granth Raj Bhagavatam ki jai, Tai Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari.